This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. We cover a lot of things going on around the Umpqua Valley in Salem and in the nation's capital as well. An opportunity today to talk to 2nd District Congressman Cliff Bentz. Congressman, thanks for being on today.
Oh, Kyle, thanks for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate it.
A lot going on, and boy, we're going to go all over the place here issue-wise. I guess, first of all, wanted to get your take on the whole U.S.-Israel-Iran military conflict.
Well, it's something that's still playing out, and it's not hugely surprising that that President Trump didn't let the Iranian folks push him around and blow smoke and finally basically called the question is probably the nicest way to put it. But there's little doubt that what Iran was trying to do was to build up its military forces and while so doing, continuing to develop an atomic weapon. And so that the
now, let's see if we lost the congressman there. We'll see if we
first
can get
destroy Israel and then come for us.
So where do you see this going now in the days, weeks, or longer ahead?
Well, that would be a guess on my part because I'm not sure, and I think a lot of us are not sure. The assertion has been by the president that there will not be, quote, boots on the ground, end quote. And I hope that it continues that way. The idea, I think, is for the military strikes with air power superiority are going to continue. And then the hope is that they will ultimately destroy not necessarily all of the missiles, because I think they have something like 5,000 of them. And but they will destroy their ability to move those missiles around and shoot them off. So their focus has been on the delivery system destruction as opposed to missile destruction. The Iranians had built some 5,000 ballistic missiles, and the estimates are somewhere around 3,000 to 4,000. They call them one-way drones and things like that go into the country, another country, and blow up. And so trying to destroy all those is quite a challenge, but that's what the focus is upon right now. And then Israel is trying to make sure that the various proxy groups that had been funded by Iran are brought to justice, if you will. And that's why you see them reaching out and trying to destroy the groups who have been funded and armed by Iran. The amount of money, I checked it out, that Iran has funneled to these various terrorist organizations is in the tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars over the past 40 years. It's just astounding the amount of money that Iran has put into people's hands to terrorize the other countries. And so it's not surprising to me that President Trump decided that enough was enough and is doing what we're seeing go on now. The real question is, and I think everybody that knew that this was coming could foresee this, is how much of an increase in gas prices and oil prices will the American people want to put up with? We've seen about a 30% increase in the value of oil over the past 7 or 8 days. And that's going to translate into higher prices at the pump very, very quickly. And so I think the American people are going to be asking, just like you are, why are we doing this and did we need to do it? It's, from what I've learned, it appears pretty clear that if we were not doing this, then Iran would have had in short order a nuclear weapon. And that's based upon the amount of uranium that they had already processed up to a very high level purity, and it just was a very short time frame for them to move to weapon grade material. So I appreciate what the president is trying to do in keeping us safe. The challenge is going to be, will the American people support this as gas prices continue to go up?
As I came into work on Saturday morning last week and learned of what was going on, one of the first things that came out in some of the early morning press releases were various members of Congress kind of weighing in on the situation. And one question there was, as a member of Congress, were you aware that the U.S. was going to take this action before it did?
I was not. The president reached out to the speaker and I think members of the committees, the Foreign Intelligence Committee and Armed Services Committee, and the committees that you would want to have aware of a imminent attack on Iran. And so, yes, he the president complied with the requirement that he notify Congress of what he intended to do. I learned about it the same time everybody else did. It wasn't a huge surprise, but we certainly were not. I was not personally called by the White House.
Now, what's the congressional role as this continues? The president is the commander in chief, but what does Congress do to have input in this situation?
Well, ultimately, Congress is responsible for declaring war. Congress hasn't really declared a war since World War II, but we've sure been involved in a bunch of them. And those have been conducted by the president, past presidents, whether it's been Democrat or Republican, in situations where force was deemed necessary. And so Congress's job is going to be to help pay or decide if it's going to help pay for this war. The estimates I've seen are $2 billion a day, maybe $3 billion a day being spent on this war. And so we're going to see, and I say war, I have to be cognizant of the fact that there are other descriptions of it that may be more apt, depending upon the nature of what we're doing and how we're doing it. So some people are using other words. I'll use war for the time being, but we will be asked, I'm sure, to support a supplemental budget appropriation to finance what's going on right now. Exactly when that will occur, I don't know. I had dinner last night with Speaker Scalise, and this issue did come up in the conversation. There were about eight of us discussing the issue, and my understanding is there's going to be a formal request for that supplemental budget pretty soon.
Now, as we look at this situation, one of the questions that comes up is whether the administration is too focused elsewhere in the world and not enough in the U.S. What's your take?
Well, it's hard to divorce oneself from the rest of the world when we are so interwoven now when it comes to trade, and also particularly when it comes to oil. And so the challenge, you can't really ignore what's going on in the Middle East because it's so important to the rest of the world when it comes to the energy that's created there and drilled and refined and shipped out of the Middle East. But when it comes to paying attention to what's going on here at home, there's lots and lots and lots of activity in the really valuable activity in the White House that's busy supporting life here at home. I'll just mention one thing. I was in the Natural Resource Committee, my committee, a couple of weeks ago, and I had occasion to remark on how dangerous a lot of our electrical corridors are and how trees have been allowed to grow up next to power lines and thus increasing the chances of wildfire. And literally, several days later, the Secretary Rollins somehow ended up seeing the video of my comms person got out, and as a result, people were out from the Forest Service around Lapine, taking down trees that were too close to power lines, and that shows you that this administration is extremely interested and extremely responsive when you let them know of a problem. And I just had a meeting yesterday morning with the United States Trade Representative, Ambassador Greer. There were only about 20, 25 of us in the room with him, and it gave me a chance to raise issues concerning tariffs and share with him some of the incredible challenges that our farmers are facing, but not just farmers, manufacturers and utilities and others, as tariffs cause uncertainty and the necessity of restructuring contracts. And I can tell you right now that Ambassador Greer was extremely anxious to hear what types of problems we were facing, and asked me repeatedly to get them the various situations to his staff, who was right there, and that's what we're in the process of doing. So I just mentioned those two, but there are many others where the White House is so much more responsive to what we're asking the agencies do than was the case during the Biden administration.
The snowpack really becoming an issue around the state, in the region. Everybody's way below normal. What are your concerns looking ahead to fire season, given that low snowpack?
Well, I certainly have concerns. What we did last year is we traveled around from Forest Service office to BLM office to other office, asking them if they had everything they needed to protect communities from the absolutely totally predictable impact of wildfire. And the answer that we received last year was that they were fine and they had plenty of personnel to do their jobs. We haven't started doing that again yet. It's just March, but given the extreme problems that we're facing when it comes to water, I'm sure we'll start asking those same questions real soon. What I've learned is that our firefighters are so used to this that they've already generally asked for what they need. And if anybody's listening out there that hasn't, then for goodness sakes, reach out to our office and we'll do our best to try to make sure that additional personnel or additional material is made available.
Now, what about the impact, though, for the Forest Service, maybe other agencies? As we went through last year, we had the DOGE cuts that were in place, and some of those obviously got pulled back, but I'm hearing that Forest Service down a large number of employees. Could this have an impact on dealing with the fire situation this summer?
Well, we certainly raised that issue with them because our visits followed the reductions in force, or the RIF, as it's called. And we were assured over and over and over again that the Forest Service and the BLM had sufficient personnel to address whatever challenges they might face, and that indeed turned out to be the case. But last year, of course, was not an aggressively awful fire year either. I will say that the amount of reductions in force was somewhere around 10%, and much of that reduction on the Forest Service side of things was not necessarily permanent personnel. We did a bunch of work trying to figure out exactly what that reduction had been, and what we learned is that there had been a dramatic buildup of personnel in the Forest Service during the Biden administration, and the reductions took us back real close to what was normal. So, again, what I've emphasized to the Forest Service and BLM is that if you think you don't have enough personnel, for goodness sakes, reach out and let us know.
And speaking of forest-related topics, we've seen this shift in federal policy and harvesting timber, and it looks like it's starting to have an impact. What do you see in the next 12 months from this newer policy?
Well, thank goodness for the newer policy. What we see is a movement on the part of the BLM in particular, but also the Forest Service, to significantly increase the amount of harvest allowed in our forests, which is a really, really, really good thing for all kinds of reasons, fire suppression being one, but jobs being another, and actually taking advantage of some of the incredible buildup of wood that's occurred over the past 50, 60 years. And so I'm very happy that the Big Beautiful Bill had in it increased harvest requirements. And I'm very happy to hear that the BLM recently announced a significant increase in harvest on the ONC lands. And to that end, I just introduced an ONC bill that's designed to make it clear as a bell that the primary purpose of ONC lands is for the benefit of the county in which that timber rests. The logging that's supposed to be happening is why those lands were originally set aside. And I'm happy to say that the BLM is cooperating with us in that regard and announced increased logging rates on those lands. So I'm very optimistic about finally getting back into the woods.
And of course, as your legislation came out, a lot of reaction. Has most of it been positive, or have you heard some negatives as well?
I haven't heard anything negative. The truth of the matter is that the way that law, the ONC law, was written, it was designed to make sure that the removal of timber for support of schools and roads and counties and law enforcement and all of that was absolutely the primary purpose of that ONC land, period. But unfortunately, the bill was not written, or the law was not written with such specificity that it couldn't be perverted, which it then promptly was. And I'm happy to say that my bill will clarify that and say, look, this land was dedicated to supporting local communities, and that's exactly what the timber on that land, on a sustainable basis, because that's clear as a bell on the bill and the law, should be used for. And so my bill simply goes in and says, hey, this is what they meant when they wrote this bill, and let's make sure that the ONC lands are managed appropriately.
Now, if this goes through, do you think that would help with what we kind of see as a seesaw between administrations or party shifts in the White House?
Oh, absolutely, because there then would be zero doubt that the primary purpose of those lands is to support the communities around them or within them. And no more will lawsuits be filed because it'll be clear that that's what's supposed to be happening. And the lawsuits will still be filed because I don't think environmental organizations can help themselves, but there'll be one less set of arguments that they will be able to assert.
As we head towards spring, or what are some of the congressional priorities that you're focused on?
One of the things I've been working super hard on, and I mentioned it earlier in our conversation, is addressing the impact of tariffs on economic activity across my district and across the state of Oregon. And to that end, we're putting together a list of things that we would like to see the Jameson Greer, the United States Trade Representative, the ambassador, address. And it's terrifically important when it comes to the types of crops that are raised across the state, whether it's sugar beets or onions or potatoes or cherries or apples or on and on. And then what's been happening is potatoes. What's been happening is we've seen the Pacific Rim countries incorrectly do a couple of things. One, subsidize their crops and their farmers in a way that's drives down their costs and makes it easy for them to dump product into our state. And then the other thing we've seen is the tightening up of their import standards, making it almost impossible to export cherries, for example, into Japan or into Korea or into Australia, Vietnam, India. And so we've been working on those things to try to help our farmers and our manufacturers as much as we can. And of course, I don't want to let this conversation go by without mentioning a conversation I had with the Veterans Administration on the retirement home there that's proposed for Roseburg. I had a very direct conversation with those who are in charge of asking for the money necessary to fund that home. And what I learned is that for various reasons, the Veterans Administration was only asking for a couple of hundred million, when in point of fact, the total amount that's going to be necessary to reach the number 80 home on the list, which is Roseburg, is about $1.3 billion. So I've made it very clear to the administration that I want to know why they are not asking Congress to give them $1.3 billion so we can get that Roseburg home funded. And so we're working right now with other legislators from other states to address the 79 projects that are ahead of us. And we're going to go in and say, look, you can't just fund four or five each year, leaving the rest of us watching. Let's ask for sufficient funds to make this happen.
As you go through the next few weeks here with the committee assignments you have, do you see particular larger topics coming up?
Well, yes. So for sure, we are going to continue to push a number of things. One is the Fix Our Forests Act, and we've had a number of hearings trying to encourage the Senate to go ahead and pass that act, because we passed it out of the House, and it's a super good act. The other thing that we absolutely have to do is get our Homeland Security budget passed. We passed it again yesterday across the floor of the House. We picked up a couple of Democrat votes, but we need the folks in the Senate, seven Democrats or eight, depending, to join the 53 or 52 Republicans, depending on the day, and get that Homeland Security bill passed. It's going to start affecting the TSA and thus flights across the United States. It's going to affect FEMA and the ability to fund repairs after natural disasters. And so we've got to get that bill passed. And so we passed it again twice now in the House, and it's up to the Senate. I would say that people listening should call Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley and say, hey, it's time for you guys to join in and get this Homeland Security bill passed.
About 30 seconds left. What about upcoming appearances around Southern Oregon?
Right. So my goal right now is to try to schedule things so I can get back to Southern Oregon. I was just there and had a series of different meetings across Jackson and Josephine counties. I didn't get a chance to go up to Douglas County, but we're working on those schedules right now.
Well, a lot going on in Washington, D.C. We'll check it again soon. Congressman Cliff Bentz, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle. I really appreciate it.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.